explain that way. Okay, Mr. Slay, you do have the survey, you can see now, I'll tell you, you have several supporters here in your face today. They'll have an opportunity to speak a little later in the hearing if they so desire. So, I'll start out by asking you first to state your full name and ABC number for the record.
Yes, sir. My full name is Patrick Reese Slay, 099357.
Thank you, sir. You're giving us some information, sir, and tell us some basics about why you're servicing and why you're talking to you again to get to know you better. The board has not talked to you before. We're some questions and answers, and once we've talked for a while, we'll let your supporters talk, and then there's some people on the victim side that wish to speak. So, as I go through the basics, I'll ask you as often if it sounds correct to you. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so this is a board hearing for Mr. Slay, and we're putting before the board one day to get the appointment this morning in reference to this board hearing. I'm going to introduce a board member that will be making a hearing at this time. On the screen to your far left is the Honorable Dr. Johnson. We have the Honorable David Rittenhouse. They may have one of the opportunity directors on the board chairman. And I'm all over the way to the honor of the notice. My name is David Neal, and I'll be hearing meetings. So, you're serving a life sentence for first degree murder with a 23-year consecutive sentence for armed robbery. The sentence began July 20th of 1992. You pled guilty to these charges and were sentenced on July 2nd, 1993. You were certified, or you became parole eligible on July, or you were become parole eligible on July 20th, 2019. So you understand that if the board were to make a decision to grant you parole to the next consecutive sentence, it would not start until July. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you were certified for this hearing, which is for parole to the next consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge, on February 20th, 2019. And this is your first time before the board. So does that all sound fair, correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. A summary of the offense. It, I'll keep it somewhat brief, but the basics are that you were on July 19, 1992 in the evening. You robbed a gentleman or a couple who were at an ATM at the First National Bank on Friday Boulevard. And after robbing them, you started around for the rear of the bank, and as you were around corner, you encountered a gentleman who was the ultimate victim, who was wearing a uniform and apparently a police officer, and you shot him. And then you started to run away, and his partner was able to return fire and lead you away. Subsequently, you were arrested after the investigation, part of which the video by the ATM was looked at, and they were able to identify a possible suspect, which was you, and then the ultimate result of the investigation was that you were arrested and charged with the crime. So does that sound like the basics of what happened that night, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so Before I start any questions or anything, I'm going to go over a little bit more information about you. So your criminal history is basically restricted to the Fort Huachuca area. You were in the Army, you were stationed at Fort Huachuca, and I guess you arrived there about December of 1991. While you were there, you were indicted along with three other people in reference to a shooting of a gang member. Your charges were eventually dismissed, and ironically, I believe you were dismissed with the name of this offense. But even though you were only indicted and was convicted, the Army discharged you on a general discharge. And that was even before the charges were actually dismissed. So does that sound correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so, you got almost no discipline and no loss since 2011. I was going to say that, my mind just went blank. No more of that as I go over. To the robbery of that couple that received a lot of money, correct?
No, sir, I had money.
Okay, because you made statements at the time that you went to the ATM, and that's where they got video, and you went to the ATM and tried to get the money, you only had $10 in your account, and so you decided to rob this couple and they came up. But anyway, at that time you'd been discharged from the Army and having struggling to get along. Might that be a good description?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you if you can. Well, I would like to ask you first if when you went around the corner of the building and you saw the victim there. Could you clearly see that you were wearing a police uniform?
No, I couldn't.
Okay.
No, I couldn't. When I went around, I ran around. First, I must apologize to Escobar and the Thomas family for the heinous crime that I committed. And I want to take responsibility for that heinous crime and ask for their forgiveness for my actions.
Okay.
And so answering your question, when I went around the corner from the bank, I seen a man with a white shirt. I could not tell he was a police officer of any kind. It's true that I had been drinking that night. I'm not trying to make any excuse for my actions, but I could not tell. And when I went around the corner, Mr. Escobar, I could hear him yelling behind me, stop that nigga, kill that nigga, shoot that nigga. So that is when I panicked and I shot twice and kept running. But I did not know it was an officer.
Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what was going on in your mind and in your life at that time that would drive you to do that armed robbery of the Escobar?
I had just been kicked out of the military, discharged from the military, and I could not leave the state. So we had altercations with this local gang. They were still trying to do us on for a crime that a fellow soldier committed. And so I was distraught by losing my career because I really wanted to be in the military. So we was living from house to house because we could not leave due to my case. I couldn't leave the state due to my case. So, so my money was short, but I had money. And I think it was a sense of pride that I had to not call home and ask for money in my situation. Ask for more money in my situation while I waited for the case, my previous case, to be resolved. I was just broken. I was broken by everything that I found myself in. You know, I've been shot at. You know, it was a teammate of my life by the gang members. But yet I still couldn't leave the state or protect myself as I see fit. So that was my mind state prior to July the 19th.
Okay, well, the gun you used, did you have that while you were still in the Army, or did you get it after you were discharged, or?
After I was shot at, my father, he gave me that gun to protect myself, because I was shot at.
Okay. So, ultimately, when they knew the other soldiers were indicted, and you were released, you were charged with dismissed against you. Were any of the other three charged or tried and convicted or anything else on those charges?
No, I don't believe so. I think one, the last one who committed the offense, he received some charge, but I think he's out. He never went to prison or anything.
Yeah, nobody was killed. Somebody was shot at or shot.
Yes, oh. Yes. One person was shot one time, and four people were arrested for the incident.
Okay. And so, did you appeal your case or have any appeal on it?
I did file an appeal in, I can't remember the year, it was early 90s. I filed an appeal on my case. The argument was made about the angle of the gunfire that killed Mr. Thomas. But necessarily, but I've taken responsibility for the crime.
Okay. Well, sometimes you go to appeal, and there are people that get their cases appealed and get sentences shortened and changed and all that stuff. So upon appeal, everything is up there?
Yes. Okay. Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, so you had some pretty good programming. You had a good release time. So tell me, how have you changed since you were incarcerated, since you were convicted on this? How have you changed that would make you a good candidate for release back into the community? What's different now than it was back when your crime was committed?
Right. Well, what I changed, as soon as I got incarcerated, I gave my life to God, because I needed a higher mind, because I was at a low state, and I needed a higher mind. So in surrendering to the principles of Christianity, they teach to renew your mind, to change your mind. So I began to practice that, and I began to take these classes, you know, AA and substance abuse, and NA, and Cocaine Anonymous, and to attack everything that I was, so I can be a better person, a better version of myself. And I kept working on that. I kept working on myself, and, you know, but I stay constant with the process of change. And as I stay constant with change, I realize that change is a process, that is a process that I must be tenacious with. You know, not just now, but in the future, I must continue to evolve and to change and to grow, because I owe that to the Escobar family, I owe that to the Thomas family, I owe that to my family and everyone that I hurt through my heinous crimes. We established a mentor group in 2012 on Stein Unit, and I'm one of the facilitators, and then one of the leaders and facilitators in which we speak to young men about change. And I know I cannot speak to young men about change if I haven't changed. So we meet every day, every once a week, we speak to them about change. So I didn't take these classes to look good. I took these classes because I wanted to be better and to be good. This has been my journey. This has been my journey to eradicate every facet of irresponsibility and my failures of my past, so I can be a better person and better citizen.
Okay. That sounds really good. Let me see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Just a quick one.
Yes, Mr. Canone.
Thank you. Mr. Slade, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I know that we went through a pretty detailed summary, but again, why were you being removed from the military at that time?
I was being removed from the military because a fellow soldier, he got into it with a local gang member.
Okay.
And he shot the local gang member. And I was present. I did not see the shooting. I did not hear anything. You know, he had my weapon. He had a weapon of mine that I purchased. So he shot this gang member because they had run-ins at clubs, and anytime we went out, they had run-ins. So he shot him one time in the back, and four of us were arrested. And when we were arrested, he told officers that he did everything. We had nothing to do with it, to let us go. But we all held until we bonded out.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Slade. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? No other questions from the board at this time, sir? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to defer to your supporters. Any of them that wish to speak can have an opportunity now, okay?
Yes, sir.
So how many of you wish to speak today? Okay, so I'll let you guys decide what order to come up. And this isn't really a reminder, it's just a reminder that we need to keep it brief. There are about 14 other inmates waiting to have hearings today.
You got it. I've been here this morning, and I understand that completely. So, we're excited. I'm Ken Sheets, the Executive Director of the Longside Ministries, and I am really, truly excited about Patrick Slade in our program. He's been in our program for about 6 years now. He's been participating. You heard about his leadership there on the yard. He is making a difference. Positive difference in a tough yard there at Steiner. And I'm excited about bringing this kid out to us. Kid, that's a relative thing. So he's younger than I am. But I'm excited about this young man. I've looked in his eyes, and I've seen things in his eyes that tell me this guy has a couple things that I want you to hear today. The humility factor is there in his life. You heard him say he owns this, he understands this, and then the other thing that I want you to hear is the remorse. I've looked in his eyes and I've seen the remorse that he has for these two families, and he would love to replay those moments in his life. He's told me that. He loved to go back, and that's a dark moment for him, to go back and admit that. That's a tough thing for these men and women to do so. So he's going back to that dark moment and saying to you guys today, I own it, but I also have hope because of that humility that the future does have something. You see the stack of the things that he's done inside. He's done an amazing job of improving himself on the inside. All those certificates, even the statements from correctional officers, those letters that you have. He does have a mentor from our program that had been meeting for months, developing that release plan that you talked about and how they will carry that release plan out to fruition when he is released to us, hopefully in July. And that's my encouragement to the board here today. We see Patrick every Monday, the Longside Ministry season, every Monday night. And we have eyes on that young man. And I want you to know we look forward to seeing him tonight. And hopefully we get to celebrate the decision here today. So I'm encouraged by this life that has been transformed, truly. I see that humility and that remorse that I believe that he has. Thank you for letting me share.
Any questions? Thanks, sir.
Yes, sir. How long have you been associated with Longside Ministry?
He applied in 2014. He was accepted in 2015, assigned his mentor just this past fall. We look at the release date, and we try and calculate the release date about 10 months out or so prior to setting up a mentor in their life. But he's been in our services, participating in our services. He's a leader for us in that unit. He's a leader also, you know, as he shared with you what he's doing with those younger men. And that's what I'm excited about.
We're here for him, of course, but how would you rank him in comparison with others who are interested in your program? So we're familiar with your program, by the way.
You know, I should be right up there at a 10. I'm so excited about this guy's heart. And I wish you could look into his eyes like I have and see this part. His mentor's going to share a little bit about the time that he has spent with him, and you'll hear from the mentor's voice as well. But I'm really high on this guy.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Morning, Lord. How are you?
Good morning.
Patrick, good morning, buddy. You can smile.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
You can smile, brother. Show me. It's okay.
Right.
I am Patrick's mentor with the Longside Ministries. I'm excited, you know, about being with them every Monday to do what I do with them. From the first day I met him, he was with our program, done all the assignments that I asked him to do ahead of time. The respect that he has in the yard by helping the youngsters out, I see it every Monday. He introduces me to him. He's a blessing to him inside too. With an opportunity to be his mentor, I've actually became a mentee of his, with him teaching me some things that I was going through with a hard time, that without him, I wouldn't have been able to make it where I am today, you know, in front of you. But the opportunities that we've had to talk about his past and where he came from, you know, to where he is now, two different worlds. Looking in his eyes and discussing what happened that night, the tears were truly coming out of his eyes. For him to accept that he did it and to acknowledge it is hard for anybody to do. And I'm just excited, you know, that he's changed his life and came to Christ, that he has an opportunity to give back while he's in there all day, all week long. He wants to develop these young men into something that he was, but to look up to what they can become too. All I can say about him is the opportunity that we have with the Longside, like Ken said, he's a 10 plus in the program. I've been with it over 2 years now, been going into Lewis for over 2 years, and I'm truly excited. I'm actually going to be the one that picks him up the day he gets out. I'm going to be the one to drive him over to our housing. I'm going to be the one to sit there with him during the week to mentor him for the next 2 years while he's out also, to make sure that we do all the right things so we can get on with life.
Okay, do you have any questions from the board?
No questions. Thank you, sir.
Hello. My name is Boogie Slay. I am Patrick's sister. And I can't call him a kid. But I am I'm here for, if he is granted parole, his extended family. He's going to have his family here with mentor. But I'm here for support as well. Whether it's helping financially when I can, or helping him with other needs that he has. I know he has mentioned that he wants to remain in the Arizona area. So, you know, whatever he needs to be a productive citizen in society, I'm all for that. One of my goals I would love him to do is continue his education. He did, of course, complete high school, and he did have some classes in college, but that's one of the things that I would love for him to continue is education. Education is the key. I know he has mentors while he's there, but he can help so many more people by extending that education, whether getting an associate's degree and mentoring other people outside, whether it's in a church setting or going back to prison to help the people who are in prison, to mentor them. But like I said, I'm his sister and I am here for support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
No questions.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Good morning, Felicity Board, and the Escobar family and the Thompson family on the phone. My name is Beverly Mathis. I'm a longtime family friend of the Slay family, Vicki Slay, for over 50 years. I'm here to say that Patrick has family support emotionally, financially, also my family, other friends in the community of Little Rock, Arkansas. We understand that he wants to stay here in the community and to get his life together, get grants. So I have the privilege of meeting alongside the people from alongside, and I feel that they would be a positive influence and they would be there for him and to guide him if given this opportunity to go back into society to make something of himself. I do agree with Vicki that education is the key, support of ministry of God. It does not negate the fact of what happened to the Thomas family, the Escobar family. I do believe he's truly sorry. I do feel for them also. But I am here to say again that we are here for Patrick, the family, my family, the community of Little Rock, Arkansas. Again, thank you.
No questions.
Thank you very much.
That's fine. That's fine.
No questions.
Okay, so that's all the supporters for Mr. Slade today. Okay. Down the phone, we have the Thomas family.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Would you like, Deborah Victims Advocate here to have some, I think, some letters and stuff to read. If it's all right with you, I'll let her read, which, you know, give what she has to give, and then I'll get back with you for your opportunity. Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right.
Hello, my name is Carrie Garrison, and I'm a victim advocate here at the Department of Corrections. I do have three letters. They are pretty brief, though. They're not really long letters. So the first letter I'm going to read is from Kayla LaFills and Tiffany Thomas, to whom it may concern. What is the value of a man, son, brother, husband, father, and friend? 26 years ago, we lost our father and mother, lost her husband, grandparents lost their son, our aunt lost her brother, a man lost his partner, another lost a friend. All this loss was the result of one individual placing $200 value on a life. No family should have to go through what ours has been through. We grew up without a father. We were never able to have a father-daughter moments and memories. We were never able to have our father walk us down the aisle. Our children will never get to know their grandfather. Our father will never hold his grandchildren. No amount of time can justify taking the life of another human being. No amount of time can correct the injustice that was done to our family. The only thing that can provide comfort is knowing this dangerous individual is off the streets and not harming other individuals. Allowing this individual to receive parole is placing a value on a life that can never be replaced. Why should he get freedom when our father can't? We request that the board deny parole. Thank you, Kayla and Tiffany Thomas. The next letter I'm going to read is from Darlene Thomas. She was the wife of John, who was murdered. To whom it may concern. In 1992, at the age of 28, my husband, John Warren Thomas, was murdered. Throughout the years, I have heard more times than I can count, I am sorry for your loss, he is in a better place, you are a strong woman. I heard these words from family, friends, and strangers. However, I never heard I'm sorry for taking away your husband, your children's daddy, and your grandchildren's grandfather. Slade has never felt the need to apologize for his actions. The decision that Slade made to shoot my husband, John Thomas, did just that. He took my husband, he took the father from my three children, and took away his chance to be a grandfather. John was my husband. I was so in love with everything about him. I had no idea how I was going to raise three children alone, celebrate birthdays, Christmases, and every other holiday without him. There is a vacancy in my heart that will forever long for him. I'm wondering how strong our love would be now today. How would we have celebrated our anniversaries together? These are all the unknown life and love adventures that were taken away from me. My children of ages 6, 4, and 1 all have their daddy taken away. John missed soccer games, football games, dance recitals, school plays, graduations, and countless other special moments in his children's lives. My children needed their dad in their lives. I cannot express my anger, my sadness, and my grief for what my children lost. I have four beautiful grandchildren. I say because John will never get the chance to experience the joy of being a grandparent. The amazement of seeing your children love a soul the way you love them. I can only imagine the amount of love he would have had for his firstborn granddaughter, Riley, now almost 6 years old. She amazes us with her beauty and intelligence. We were captivated over every move of hers and told her how much her grandfather would have loved her. Then John W. III, that's right, his grandson was named after him, is so much like his dad and grandfather. Then Garrett, who is a wild and loving from his youngest child, Tiffany, who never really got to know her daddy. Our daughter, Kayla, struggled to get pregnant. She spent several years of pain not being able to conceive. Then last year, in October, I was blessed again with another beautiful granddaughter, Sydney. In conclusion, my husband was taken away from his family far too soon. Slade's actions cost me my husband, my children, their daddy, and my grandchildren, their grandfather. Slade has never apologized or showed remorse for my family. I have made it through hard days on prayers and hope. Slade denied my family of John. My hope for today is he is also denied. I have taught my children that all actions have consequences. Darlene Thomas. And my next letter is from Sarah Thomas. To whom you may concern, my name is Sarah Thomas. I am the wife of John Warren Thomas, Jr., the daughter-in-law to John Warren Thomas, Sr., the man who Patrick Slade was convicted of murdering. My husband has recently finished boot camp and starts officer candidate school for the United States Army today, Monday, February 25th. He wanted to write a letter to speak himself today at the hearing. However, the timeline was short for him. I have many different points of views on the situation. I see the pain that is still present today. I am an educator, and I believe in right and wrong, and I am a fearful woman. The pain that my husband has is deep. His father was taken away from him without an explanation. There were many times in his life when he needed a dad to talk to him through situations, to coach him, to teach him. Although there were other men, grandfathers, uncles, and friends to help him, it is not the same as your dad being there. The pain is not just my husband's that I am able to see. Patrick Slade took the life of a man who was very well loved. John has two sisters, grandparents, a mother, aunts, and uncles. They're all still suffering in pain from the loss of my father-in-law. When my husband and I first started dating, we were in a restaurant. When I went to the restroom to come back to an empty table, John had walked outside to escape the anger. He had received a notification on Facebook that Patrick Slade had a Facebook page. He was being braggadocious about the crimes that he committed to gain followers and attention of women. The situation caused more pain for everyone. Although the page has been taken down, I can still remember the harsh emotions. I am also a teacher. I educate my students on right and wrong. I teach them that your actions have consequences. In this case, Patrick Slade's actions have consequences. He must continue to pay for those actions. Not all actions that we make in life can be washed away in an apology. Some have lifelong punishments. I am also a God-fearing woman. I believe in a mind for a mind and a tooth for a tooth. I also believe that God's wrath will be far worse than any punishment on earth. However, I am a flawed person. I am fearful for my own children. I write this letter in tears, thinking about if this were my husband's mother, if this were my own children's father, how would it change? I pray and thank God that it's not. My prayers are often that everyone hurting in anger and grief will know peace. Thank you, Sarah Thomas.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have copies of the letters. I just want to put it in your packet.
Okay, ma'am. Ms. Thomas?
Yes.
Okay, would you like to address the board?
Yes, you would.
Yes, I would.
Okay, it's your turn now. Would you state your full name first?
Kathleen Thomas.
Thank you.
I am the mother of John Warren Thomas Sr. He was my son, my love. I cannot even express the anger, the hurt, the loss that I feel. I see where Slade gets to have visitors. He gets to have mail. He gets phone calls. He gets to move around. My son can't do that. My son's dead. Because of him. The night that he did the robbery, he shot my son in the wrist first. My son fell back. Then Mr. Slay went up and shot him in the head. He meant to kill him. He meant to get away. When he took that gun to the robbery, he was determined. If he had to, he would use it. He was not going to let anybody get in his way. And at the time, my son stood in his way because my son was doing what he was supposed to be doing. He was an Arizona Ranger. He was working his job. Patrick Slade had no money in that bank. He had no business at that bank. But yet, he went to rob somebody because he didn't want to work for what he needed. And that was probably drugs. But I will never forgive him for what he has done to me and my family. I don't understand how he could even think about parole. The only time I think he should get parole is when my son walks back through the door. If I want to talk to my son, I can't. If I want to see my son, I can't. I can go to a cemetery that has a cold stone and say, son, I love you and I miss you more than you'll ever know. But I can't feel anything from him. I can't put him in my arms and hold him and say, honey, it'll be better, because it's not. Every day, there is not a day that goes by that I don't think about my child. And I wonder what he went through, how he felt that night, knowing that he was going to be shot again. And when he was at the hospital and they had him on all the life support machines, that was not doing him a bit of good, because my son was dead. When they turned that machine off, I prayed to God, let him take one breath, just one breath. And I asked God to take me instead of my child. I would have given my life for my child. And Patrick Slade can sit there and say, he's changed, he's going to church, he's doing this and he's doing that. My son went to church. My son was an altar boy. My son was in the military. He was an Arizona Ranger. He was doing something with his life, contributing. Patrick Slay was in a gang, involved in another shooting. And he said, oh, I found God now. I'm changed. No. No parole. No where, no how. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board?
Yes. His sister.
Okay.
She's going to
My name's Deanna Thomas-Quillis.
Go ahead.
Let me begin by saying this is not easy to do. It brings up a lot of bad memories for all of us, even though it's been 26 years. But to me, that time seems like it was yesterday. You never forget that feeling of being woken up in the middle of the night and told your brother, your best friend, that you've had for 27 years, who's been your confidant, that you tell things to that you didn't tell anybody else to, has been shot, and it doesn't look good. Then when we get to the hospital and you get to see your brother for the first time, all you see is the breathing machine going and all the other machines. A part of your brain tells you, you know things are not good, but the other part of your brain is telling you that's still your brother there. And you hope, you pray, you do everything you can think of. Ask God, please, give him back. I will do anything if you give him back. But of course, nothing works. Because they tell us there's no brain activity. So, we know what that means, and we all stayed and watched as they turned off all the machines. And I watched my brother take his last breath. Did any of you understand how hard that was for me? How precious George's life was to all of us. And then you have to know his body has to go through an autopsy because it's a murder case. They cut my brother open and took everything out. Do you know what that even feels like? To know that your brother went through that shit? All because it's a murder case, not an accident, a murder. Because a man decided to rob a stranger at an ATM with a gun at the front of a bank while he was already out on bond for another charge and couldn't leave the state. So he decides he's got his money, I'm going to run into the back of the bank. Sees my brother John standing there. And I will tell you, it is full. He is telling you that he didn't know my brother wasn't an Arizona Ranger. Everybody in that state knew that uniform. Everybody. So he just starts shitting. The first shot knocked my brother down. He could have ran away and been done. He could have been done at that point and gotten away. But no, he goes over my brother and shoots him in the head. He made sure my brother was not going to survive. He made more than sure by shooting him in the head. John was more than a brother to me. Like I said, he was my best friend. I talked things over with him that I couldn't talk over with anybody else. He gave me advice. He listened to me when I needed him. And I don't have that anymore. I never, ever get to hear his voice again. I never get to see his face again. But yet, Clay gets to write letters to his family. He gets to talk to his family. His sister's in now. She can see him if she wants to. I can't see my brother. I never, ever get to see my brother again. I never get to hear him again. Playcell is bigger than my brother's casket. To me, if you take a life, then you forfeit your life.
Continue.
I'm not done yet, thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, we do need to move on. There's about 14 other inmates waiting for their hearings today.
The last thing I have to say is I still remember his father getting up on the stand and preaching about what a good son he had. His son was raised in the church. His son was a good boy. But yet his son committed murder. And now people are going to say, oh, how good he is, how he's improved himself, he's found God. Well, God don't want him. So my suggestion is no parole, and it be deferred for a year. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. So,
Hello? We have one more.
Okay.
His father would like to speak.
Okay.
My name is George W. Thomas III. I'd like to start off that so was Arlene Barnes, the guy that was murdered. He went up to a gentleman, which is a victim. He robbed him. His wife was in the parking lot with her headlights on. As Mr. Stray took off, the other victim, I'm not mentioning name, the other victim, was hollering at him. My son turned around, and the lights blinded him. He put his arm up so he could see what ruckus was. This gentleman shot my son in the wrist, knocked him down. He could have got away. But no, he ran up and shot my son in the head. That's why I dislike this gentleman. Then I get a call in the middle of the night that my son's been shot. So we fly to Arizona to see my son on a life support sheet. They took a brain test on him. It fell, they said his brain dead, and they wanted to turn the machine off. We said, no, as a family, we'd like this taken one more time. It took 4 hours. They pronounced the same thing. He was dead. So they wanted to turn the machine off, and so we went to be around my son. And for 22 minutes, we watched our son fight for his life and everything that was going out of him. As of this day, and I hear a hard pop from a air compressor, it looks like my son's fault, because when they popped that life support machine for my son, everybody in that room jumped 3 foot. And then I hear that Mr. Stray can have visitors and phone calls, and he complains about his cell. Well, my son don't have that privilege. I have a lot more to say, but I'm not. But the only thing I will say from this is my son gave me free medical care insurance. He gave me four great acts for me, which they'll never get to see in his life. But the fact is such a dark world that I just like this gentleman. And so it got through. Hello? Sir?
Yes?
Thank you for listening to all of us.
You're quite welcome, ma'am. Everybody has had a chance that they're about to speak?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am. And you're welcome to stay on the phone to the rest of the hearing, or if you...
Yes.
If you'd like, you can hang up, but it's up to you.
We're going to listen.
Okay. All right, so at this time, we've heard the supporters for Mr. Slay, we've heard the victims in this case, and we don't have a Deputy County Attorney here to speak. So, Mr. Slay, back to you.
Yes, sir.
We're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will be going into discussion shortly to make a determination. But before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else you think we might need to know before making a decision. We'll just ask that you don't repeat all of the stuff that we've already covered, okay?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. In 2014, there was a riot at Steiner Union between African Americans and Hispanics. Afterwards, you know, they segregated everyone, segregated African Americans from the rest of the population. And after a couple of days, you know, the Special Security Unit from around the state and other officials came up to the unit. And when they came up to the unit, they asked the officers, who can we talk to? Who is easy to talk to? Who can we communicate with? And and all the officers named me, and they came and got me to communicate with them about these angry men and about reintegrating back into the yard. So I began working with them and transferring this information back to these African American men, as well as being a facilitator of peace and helping them reintegrate the yard again. And I say this because the man I was, he wouldn't have cared. He wouldn't have got involved because, you know, I'm not from Arizona. I'm not in a gang or anything. But I got involved because I have changed, and I want to be the epitome of change. Not just for me. I realize I have to. Part of change is giving. And I owe the rest of my life to that giving, to that change, because I gotta reach these guys because we gotta reach them when they're young and change their thinking. You know, it's one thing reaching them in prison, but we have to reach them when they're young, or we're gonna have to keep building more prisons and more security systems. And that is my aim, that is my goal. And again, lastly, I wanna apologize, say I'm sorry, and to the Escobar family, to the Thomas family, to my family, for my heinous crimes that I've committed, for failing y'all, for walking in pride in my youth. And that is all I have to say.
Thank you very much, sir. What are we doing in the discussion and making determination? We'll be talking amongst ourselves. You can hear the whole conversation. We so ask that you remain silent, but stay on the phone. And once we've made a determination, I'll get back with you, okay?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and for everyone else, whether it be supporters or on the victim side, we ask that everybody remain silent, regardless of what you might hear the board saying, okay? All right, we're now in discussion. Well, this is Mr. Slade's first time in front of the board, so there's a lot of information to be looked at and digested and gone over. At this point in time, the only release that could be considered would be an absolute discharge, but there was his consecutive sentence. I'm not even sure if he was prone on the murder charge, if he was on an absolute discharge, I think he could have been a 23-year sentence. But irregardless, in my mind, the consideration is whether to move Mr. Slade forward to his 23-year consecutive sentence. And at the end of that sentence, he still has to come back and remove his eligible for parole, and that would come back from the board, and both charges can be considered, but not until that time. So, other than absolute discharge, there's no release at this time. I know Mr. Slade has done a pretty good job of putting his life in order. This is a short time from the board, so it is a little bit harder to make a determination at this point in time because we haven't seen anything other than the overall record, and then we're just now being introduced to Mr. Slade. However, on the flip side of that, the idea, and because I have been a victim and I know what this is all about, as one voting member and the personal sort of feeling, I would think put on the back of the second sentence as a sign of release might be a good idea. However, I really don't think the victim side is in favor of that, since they already said mentioned coming back in a year. But the man can say you sentence you do like 14 or 15 years before you would be eligible for parole. So overall, I think Mr. Slade has done a pretty good job. While I'm programming, I know that the homicide doesn't just take anybody into their program, and I haven't told them how this highway not even ready yet, but you know, if they've taken you under their wing, they have a high opinion of you and what they've done. But I'm a little bit troubled with the idea of the circumstance, what I read and so on, based on what everybody has been saying. It appears that the first shot may have been a wild, instinctive shot, but then locking up to whoever the victim happens to be and intentionally pulling the trigger again is, that's a little beyond. And at that point in time, it would be hard not to recognize they're in a ranger uniform. They look like, pretty much like any police uniform. So at this time, I'm kind of torn. One reason I'm torn is the idea of another 14 years before the parole hearing could be beneficial to the victims. But the victims aside, everything else considered, at this point, I'm not in favor of parole to an active consecutive sentence. But I'd like to hear some discussion from my fellow board members.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I appreciate, I try to understand the victim's point of view. I try very hard to do that. And, you know, as you mentioned, you've had the experience of being a victim. I've had the experience of being a crime victim, but not a murderer. But one thing I appreciate about Mr. Slay is his attitude of accountability for the crime. And there's no discrepancy. I didn't feel like there was a discrepancy in the way he relayed the crime to the way the letter, which we have from the Cochise County Attorney, relays the crime. I mean, I believe I understand what happened that day. And I do hear genuine remorse in his voice. We see many, many inmates, and I think his attitude is different from most of the inmates we see. That would just be my observation. I do think he's committed to change, and I also very much appreciate his commitment to working with others to help them change. That, I guess that's the thing that sticks with me most, and maybe that's what's has impressed Alongside Ministries so much about him. So at this time, with complete respect to the victims, I would support, as a way of encouraging that to continue, I would support paroling him to his next sentence. Only because he is different from many, many of the inmates that we hear. So thank you, Mr. Neal.
Mr. Thomas, did you have something to say?
I'll try to keep it short. Thank you, Mr. Neal. This is one of those challenging cases because we do look to the reform and rehabilitation of people inside the Department of Corrections. But that is counterbalanced by a crime that has the real possibility of a life sentence. And whether or not it serves the interest of justice to grant parole to an individual who, in such a violent state, shot a uniformed individual who represents the law at this point, I am not, I'm not ready to support Peralta's next consecutive sentence. I do want to say I do think Mr. Slay is on a trajectory of recovery, and I think he's accounted well for himself inside the Department of Corrections. And I think as a matter of personal integrity, and this is tough, I recognize that I'm saying these things in the face directly of the victims listening right now. But I think Mr. Slay shows promise. It doesn't mean that the system insists that victims forgive anyone. We're in no position to recommend that or insist upon that. I don't think forgiveness will be happening for Mr. Slay anytime soon from the victims, but I do think that he shows promise. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Johnson.
I with in all understanding, sympathy to the victim, you know, I think all of us have probably had some life, you know, I've had a brother that's been, you know, murdered, and I understand the traumatic impact that it has on the family. I understand how the impact that it has on my family still today. However, I do think that Mr. Slay has, if I look at the entire situation that has gone through, that, you know, he went into the military, he, you know, decided to serve his country, that there was some positive things that even before this incident happened that Mr. Slay was trying to do. He came across some very difficult, tragic things that happened. There's no excuse, none whatsoever, whether the victim was a police officer in uniform or not in uniform, to shoot at or murder someone. I don't think that there's any excuse for that, regardless. I do think that Mr. Slay has been incarcerated. He's done some things to improve himself. I think he's restyled. I do think that he has done what he can do to rehabilitate himself so that he won't be a threat or a danger to society. I think he has learned a lesson for that time that he has been incarcerated, and he does have family support as well as alongside ministries that's come in to stand up and support him. If he's paroled to his next consecutive sentence, he goes to a 23-year sentence that he has to serve, and then once he serves that 23-year sentence before he's eligible for parole, he falls back on that life sentence. Then he has to come back before this board again on that. I think that because of Mr. Slade's positive attitude, because of the things that he's done while he's been incarcerated, I think, you know, paroling him to his next consecutive sentence would be I would be in favor of paroling him to his next consecutive sentence based on the 23-year sentence that he has to go to, and then he has to go back to that life sentence and come back up before this board for parole. So I would hope that it would encourage him to continue to do the work that he's doing while he's incarcerated, continue to work with alongside ministry to make a positive influence and maybe impactful to other people's lives to not be impacted in this type of way.
Thank you, sir. Okay,
thank you, Mr. Neal. I think that this one is pretty tough to make an appropriate decision. I think that, yes, to be sure, Mr. Slay has made progress. No one can deny that. However, I must say, sometimes it's important to think about the victims, what they're going through, and how they are feeling at this particular moment. And even if we moved him to his next consecutive sentence, it wouldn't become effective until July of this year. With that being said, I think it would be most appropriate not to move him to his next consecutive sentence, and then maybe come back in 6 months and re-examine him again, since he can't move him at all until July of this year, according to what Ames has presented to the board. That's just my feeling, but we go by the majority vote of this board. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. But I think at this time, based on the totality of everything, I am in reference to Patrick Slay, ABC number 099357. I am going to move to deny both the next consecutive sentence of absolute discharge for Mr. Slay at this time.
Second, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm going to say 6 months, not a 1 year setup on this piece. I think Bob is right, and Bob Lennon is correct in that respect. So, by the way, I'm working with 6 months instead of 1 year setup.
Second, and I do agree with the doctor.
Agree.
Disagree.
I disagree.
Okay, so voting by myself, second by Mr. Canales, agreed by Dr. Ray, disagreed by Mr. Johnson and Mr. Canales. So with a 3-2 that carries the motion. And the reason will be a serious and violent offense, the loss of his life. Because of the fact that it was an instantaneous death, there was some crime to the victim, and in this case, it was probably considered. Multiple victims. And when you're armed robbery, the victim is basically harassed. And he was basically on the list for some other felony indictments. We commit this. Okay. Well, it can't work. Okay, well, somebody has something else they like. Check off that one. Okay, Mr. Slay.
Yes, sir.
The board voted 3-2 to deny a board mentioned 70 sentence and after the discharge at this time. We did not choose to ask for a 1 year set off, so you will in about 6 months. You should be certified and returned in front of the board, and we can discuss it again at that time. And you have reasons for denial?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, we do wish you luck. Continue on the path we're going on. It's a good path. And we wish you the best of luck and wish you a good hearing.